This podcast doesn't do commercials for a number of reasons that you'll hear me discuss if you listen long enough. But if you want to support this work, feel free to click on the link at the bottom of most podcatchers that says support the show. Half of everything donated goes to addicted people, people struggling with homelessness, and people who are struggling to get out of prison and back on their feet. Enjoy the show.
There is a national shortage of the drug Adderall, which is used to treat attention deficit disorders.
New and growing frustration right now over this nationwide shortage of key ADHD medicine, with one mom telling our medical team how her family has to sometimes ration the doses she gives to her son because they're afraid
of running millions
out.
Of Americans can't fill their prescriptions amid a nationwide shortage.
Local pharmacists say the shortages of opioid medications are only getting worse. I spoke with the patient about how it's having a significant impact on his quality of life.
Chronic pain patients in our area say a shortage of their medication is sending them into withdrawals. One provider says she's getting at least a dozen calls a day about it.
Welcome. I'm Ben Boyce, and this is the Dr. Junkie Show. Remember Nancy Reagan's Just Say No campaign?
Say no to drugs and say yes to life.
Think about how ridiculous it looks today, how much of a total waste of time it was to attempt a strategy like that for controlling human desire to alter our experience of life. I like to imagine that, in all her wisdom, Nancy was sitting around one day, resting her chin on her hand, looking upward in deep thought, and she worked out the problem kind of like this. These kids are too young to really understand much about life. Pain, love, loss, accomplishments, dreams deferred, and all that stuff. But someday they will understand that stuff. And some of them might die from suicide, or suffer from depression, or wind up in bad marriages, or become addicted to drugs. All kinds of bad results if we don't prepare them. But I have an idea. I imagine her eyes got really big here. I can at least help them avoid addiction. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I have the perfect plan. While they're still too young to understand the drive to get loaded, I'll just teach them to just say no. And then when they do feel that drive to get loaded years from now, they can remind themselves, I have a great tool from old Aunt Nancy. No! And the urge will just subside. Seriously, Nancy?
And that's a way to teach every one of our children to just say no to drugs.
Of course, we now know that the White House is renowned for saying yes when it comes to drugs, and for good reason. I mean, imagine you're the personal doctor of the President of the United States, and that he's flying 12 hours to meet with somebody important on the other side of the globe. And let's say that the flight is during the President's normal daytime, when he would be awake, and is landing during what would normally be night, when he would be asleep. It'll be light out when he lands, 9 a.m. actually. And the president is almost certainly going to have some wicked jet lag. It wouldn't take a huge stretch of the imagination that the doctor might give the president a sleeping pill or a Valium partway through the flight to help him nap, and then some sort of stimulant when they land to get him ready for the meeting. But we don't have to actually stick to hypotheticals for this. JFK's legacy is packed with wild stories of drug use. Codeine, Demerol, and methadone for pain. Ritalin for whatever he was using it for, Meprobate, also known as Miltown, and Librium for anxiety, and of course, lots of barbiturates for sleep. Trump's White House was, quote, awash in speed and Xanax, according to a recent report by the Department of Defense's Inspector General. But of course, to those paying attention, it's no surprise that the most vocal drug warriors frequently turn out to be the most vocal liars when it comes down to their actual morals. Harry Anslinger, the guy who started the drug war, the guy who chained Billie Holiday to a hospital bed and had her methadone withdrawal so she'd die in agony, that guy, he took opioid medication throughout the end of his life. And prior to that, he likely set up a secret prescription through that White House pharmacy so Joe McCarthy, yes, that Joe McCarthy, so he could pick up daily fixes of narcotics on the government's dime without getting busted. During the Reagan administration years later, the CIA actually helped smuggle cocaine into the United States during the Iran-Contra scandal as the drug war was kicking into high gear. Those waging the war weren't actually in it to protect the public. They were in it to line their pockets and secure their access to power. That's still going on today. I mean, sure, some of the drug warriors believe the methods they're using will somehow eventually prove effective. Like, if we just kill, lock up, and ruin the lives of enough drug users and dealers, they think, we'll eventually win this 100-year war. A century of war with no ground gained, trillions of dollars lost, and millions of lives lost is proof enough that it's not a winnable war. But instead of going forward and trying new things, it appears that we're yet again going backwards in this country. Here's one of the latest updates on the war machine, designed, as all war machines are, to deliver only pain, suffering, confinement, and death to a targeted group, in this case, drug users and dealers. If you take a narcotic painkiller, opioids, or a stimulant drug like Adderall or Ritalin, you've probably experienced something like the following situation during the last 2 years. You go to your monthly doctor's visit, annoying that it's even necessary because they just say, "How you doing?" "Good. Blood pressure looks fine. See you next month." Then charge you a couple $100. Capitalism. Then you wait a few hours for a text that says, "Your script is ready for pickup." But oddly, that text doesn't show up. Not that morning, not that afternoon, and not even that night. And when you wake up the next morning, it's still not there. What the hell? It's a good thing you kept a few extra pills from last month when you didn't take them all. But hold on to that story in progress for just a second, because it's worth pointing out right now that this is yet another fucked up design flaw, or maybe a design improvement, depending on what you think the real goal of the drug war is. A policy that's certain to increase the frequency and severity of addiction by removing doctors from the equation and sending users to the streets to deal with poisoned, overpriced, untaxed drugs in a money-driven police force steeped in the politics of war who classify you as an enemy. Just saving those pills when you don't need them and just feeling relief when you know that the medication you take, the medication your doctor told you to take, that causes physical dependency, so you can't just stop taking it without being physically sick, that medication, just knowing it's there and can make you feel better, I don't have to worry about withdrawal symptoms today. Phew. If you tell your doctor about that, if you say, "Man, doc, you wouldn't believe it. Last month they didn't fill my script for days, but at least I had a couple pills on stash." Phew. Your doctor will probably shake their head in disappointment and pull out their little clipboard or tablet to make a note. Addiction risk. Patient is stockpiling medication. Doctors are trained to see that sort of behavior not as smart or indicative of not being addicted. You know, since you can actually put some drugs away for a rainy day instead of binging out, that kind of indicates you're at least moderating the situation. Oh no, they see that behavior as a sign that you are addicted, and that you should therefore be watched very closely and maybe even cut off. And we're back to the land of doctors who pretend to think that cutting off drug users doesn't just send us to the streets. They know better. Now back to our story. The text never shows up, so you call the pharmacy at 9 a.m. to ask where your pills are. "Did y'all's text machine break down?" "No," says the pharmacist, "but we don't have your medicine right now. I mean, we have the same pill in a smaller dose and in a larger dose. We have one that's a time-release formula, and we even have a patch version of that drug, but sorry, your specific pill isn't here, and we can only issue the exact prescription your doctor wrote. But don't worry too much, it'll probably be here soon. Maybe check back tomorrow." Yikes, you think, I've only got a couple of these pills left. I hope I get my shipment tomorrow. Imagine the panic you'd start to feel. But they won't get their shipment tomorrow, and they might not get it the next day. There were times during the last year when my wife, who was taking painkillers for a while waiting on back surgery, where she waited more than a week to get her prescriptions, and they never had a good story. I mean, the pharmacist never said, "Oh yeah, sorry, the pill truck got robbed outside and they took your drugs," or anything like that. It was just always vague, reasonless, "Wait a few more hours and hopefully it shows up. Sorry, we can't tell you anything else." Talk about feeling helpless. This is yet another clear way to encourage addiction. I've talked about this part plenty before, but a brief reminder, one of the most important and most ignored aspects of addiction has to do with the frequency and size of a user's typical dose. If you can figure out a way to, say, get a hardcore 50-year-old alcoholic who's pounding a gallon of whiskey a day to moderate their use and stop a few beers in when they're, say, 21 years old, well, that guy won't ever be a 50-year-old whiskey pounder. And on the other hand, if you could take a 22-year-old who's only drinking a couple cans of beer a day and manipulate him into drinking a gallon of whiskey every night instead, you could tip the scales and increase his likelihood of addiction later in life, say, when he's 50. But how could we do that without the person noticing? I mean, how do you make somebody drink more or less without them realizing you're trying to make them do it? Anxiety. Specifically, anxiety about drug supply. Rats who push a button and get a hit of morphine or cocaine will push the button in some situations and not push it in others. I've talked about this research a lot on the show. If the button doesn't ever deliver a drug, or if the button delivers a drug all the time, the rats will actually push it less often than if the drug is delivered unsteadily and unreliably in a random pattern that's unpredictable. Anxiety about our supply drives addiction by increasing desire to use. Drug shortages put us in a situation that's very similar. Is my medication about to be cut off when I run out of the few pills I have? Yikes. Maybe I better hit the streets now and try to figure out where to find some. In fact, I'm feeling pretty stressed out. Give me a pill. A couple episodes ago, I talked about the ways in which doctors are now being recruited into the drug war with incentives similar to those I've already mentioned today. They've been asked to police their patients with expensive drug tests and treatment requirements that drive many of us to the streets. And in return, they get to make a little extra coin and wash their hands of our blood while increasing our risk of death. The federal government managed to get them on board not just with the incentive of those extra fees for drug testing, the drug test costs more than $100 at my old office, but also with vague threats of prosecution aimed at any doctor not prescribing controlled substances properly. The natural reaction if you're a doctor is to align with the status quo to avoid detection and discipline. Get these drug users out of here. But again, where do they think we're going to go? We've literally built the system to maximize addiction. This part of the problem did not fall out of the sky. Roll back the clock just a few years, and you'll remember a lot of shit changed really fast. The world fell apart, and we all had to stay home for, like, years. And the government made some great decisions regarding drug availability. For example, they opened the doors of telehealth, they allowed doctors to prescribe Adderall, Ritalin, opioids, and other drugs via video call so we could all stay home. And it got easier to access drugs that make us feel better at the same time as life got super boring for everyone. Surprise, prescription for stimulants went way up during the pandemic. But no worries, it was easy enough to get them via telehealth as long as you had insurance. Telehealth is now going away or gone, depending on where you live. Even the family doctors are worried about being labeled pill mills or even having one of their patients struggle with addiction after prescribing them a drug. Oh no, then they might have to treat us. The pharmacies are now also scared about massive lawsuits from the DEA. But so are the actual pill manufacturers, many of whom have actually been ordered to reduce or halt their production of drugs, leading to the current shortage. That's right. The current pharmaceutical drug shortage has everything to do with the century-old $200 billion a year drug war. We separated good drugs from bad drugs as the war began 100 years ago. Toby Seddon called this process decoupling, and it led to the acceptable legal drugs like alcohol and tobacco being seen very differently than chemicals like heroin and cocaine in the public's imagination. Then, in the 1970s and 80s, we upped the incentives for local police departments to make drug arrests, often at the expense of solving violent or sexual assault crimes they might otherwise have been targeting, because we allowed them to seize any cash and property related to the possible sale of an illegal substance. Next, we incentivized local communities to support prison construction and mass incarceration by spending 30 years expanding the prison population and, relatedly, the number of people who make their income from its existence. And now, as the rates of incarceration have dropped slightly for the first time in decades, were responding by literally pressing otherwise law-abiding drug users to the streets by cutting off their supply of legal drugs, namely Adderall, Ritalin, and opioids. So here's how it works. The DEA sets import quotas on the raw materials that are used to make these drugs. They literally decide how many pills can be manufactured in the United States every year. And that means there isn't usually a lot of extra medication floating around because, surprise, the government's pretty strict about those regulations. And despite the DEA blaming these recent shortages on anything but their policies, it's pretty clear they've played a huge role in this now years-long shortage. During the pandemic, when we were all bored, depressed, lonely, struggling to pay attention, when those prescriptions went up, the government didn't keep up with the increased prescriptions by raising their quotas fast enough. In 2022, just after the DEA reported the shortage for the first time, they evaluated their quota in lieu of all the new prescriptions that had been written and, wait for it, they left the new number for 2023 exactly the same as 2022. No increase. But it's not their fault, right? And of course, it gets worse. Take just one company who sued the DEA, so their information is a little bit easier to come by than most. Ascent Pharmaceuticals was making around 20% of the stimulant medication consumed in the United States, around 47 million Adderall and Ritalin pills in 2022. And now they aren't producing any because the government never replied to their 2023 request for a pill quota and approval to manufacture. The DEA actually left them hanging for so long that Ascent eventually sued to force a decision. And a few days later, the quota was not only reduced, but production was completely suspended for all controlled substance without any specific reason offered other than sloppy record keeping. In one example, the DEA mentioned, drug orders that are canceled are supposed to be both crossed out and marked canceled underneath. In a couple of the orders, they were only crossed out, not covered up with the word canceled. Oh my. So we've got this civil war mentality from top to bottom, frosted in a sugary glaze of capitalism. Civil wars pop off because instead of a system, a country, working together to protect itself from outside threats, it instead starts to look for the enemy within, turning our suspicions towards those who are part of the group. The medical system is no longer a group of interconnected pieces working together to solve the problem of legal, safe drug supply. It's become a self-policing, tail-eating monster that thrives on being suspicious of its members. I mean, think about the basic process of just getting a pill. I need a doctor to write me a prescription for a condition because the government says I can't get the medication without their permission. But my doctor isn't just going to play along. They're going to question me, challenge me, drug test me, maybe say no outright, and they're going to charge me no matter what because the government might be watching and they don't want to risk it. The safest thing for them is to just blow me off and take my visit fee, then move on to the next safer customer who only needs an antibiotic. They often don't work with or for patients anymore. They work with and for themselves and their survival within the institution of medicine. What choice do they have? Now, if I do manage to get the script, I move up the chain of civil war to the local pharmacy, where I'll again be allowed to pay them a profit if and only if I can jump through the right hoops, answer the right questions, present the right forms of ID at the right time, all because they, too, are worried about the government coming after them. And nowadays, they're also worried about their distributors coming after them, saying no to orders. Because civil war mentality being what it is, the government has now sued many of those manufacturers for shipping controlled substances to pharmacies when they claim they should have looked closer at the orders to make sure they were legitimate. Because the 100-year-old war on drugs works so well that it's completely ineffective if drug manufacturers don't do the job of the police for them. And cleverly, all the while, despite it feeling like they're about to pounce at any second, the government's actually watching from afar, proud to have crafted a system in which everyone, for the most part, polices themselves and everyone else so the cops don't have to. I mean, sure, once in a while the DEA might sue a company to remind us that they're still capable of destroying anyone who doesn't kiss the ring and conform, but the majority of the players in the pharma game, from customers to doctors to pharmacies to manufacturers, They have to play along to avoid the hassle of being targeted by Uncle Sam. And voila, we've built yet another new level on top of our century-old drug war, sending users to the streets and, eventually, to jails and to prisons where they can replace those who were released during the recent downward tick in incarceration during COVID. We can repack the prisons and rehire the staff we let go along the way because of the population decrease. And by doing so, we weave those people seamlessly back into the web of war on drugs normalcy by making sure their careers depend on it continuing forever. If I didn't know better, I'd almost think this system was built to make sure people will struggle with addiction, and that when they do, they're rapidly pressed out of legitimate medicine into the streets, where law enforcement can take over. It's a pretty clever design that prevents any accountability over the DEA. I mean, who's going to call the head cop over there and say, hey, stop making it difficult for people to get lots of oxy in our current atmosphere? No one. So to summarize the workings of institutional power yet again, opioid manufacturers are being sued or shut down because the government claims they're sending too many pills to pharmacies. So the manufacturers send less pills, flagging suspicious orders, blackballing some pharmacies altogether just to placate the government. They adopt a civil war mentality as they keep an eye out for an enemy within their own group. At the end of the year, because scared manufacturers didn't fill a lot of the legal orders they got for fear of DEA oversight, the quotas set by the government weren't filled. What do you know? You didn't ship out the maximum number of pills allowed last year, so the DEA can leave the quota the same. No increase necessary for next year, even though we know doctors wrote way more prescriptions. They can point to manufacturers' fear-based decisions to not ship out their entire quotas for fear of prosecution. It wasn't the DEA, it was the manufacturers. And they can ensure the medication shortage will continue to be a problem, driving arrests up when users head to the streets and packing our prisons again, making the war on drugs look as necessary as ever. I mean, look at all they've accomplished over the last few years. They all get to blame each other, but only one of these institutions is beyond the risk of bankruptcy, oversight, legal sanctions. It's the government. For those that listened through last week's episode about Foucault, this probably sounds familiar. It's how power works by getting into the heads of those in positions of power and manipulating them into doing what others want them to do. That manipulation comes not best through force, but through coercion, through knowing and shaping the ideas one holds related to the institutions they interact with daily. If the government might come arrest me for something, I'm naturally going to adjust my behavior to avoid arrest. So what do we do? Well, I love an episode that presents a problem that's actually easy to fix. And while the solution to addiction is far from simple, the solution to drug shortages is not. As Lord Acton said in his 1887 letter to the Anglican bishop, power corrupts, and ultimate power corrupts ultimately. You can't expect institutions who exist for the sole purpose of prosecuting and persecuting drug users and dealers to somehow also value the lives of those same people. They are, after all, at war with us, and they have the benefit of quite literally being above the law in many ways. Upton Sinclair's End Poverty campaign slogan rings true again here. It's difficult to get a man to understand something when his livelihood depends on his not understanding it. The solution is to get government out of medicine, to go back to what was working. Online prescriptions, access to safe, affordable medications, medical professionals who care about the well-being of their patients. Sounds pretty simple, right? So here's hoping this is a problem we don't deal with for a lot longer. Although I wouldn't be surprised if I start to hear stories from some of my incarcerated students detailing their experiences navigating this medication shortage. Something like, I was fine on Adderall for a few years, Dr. Boyce, but then the pharmacy ran out for a week, my doctor lowered my dose because I had weed in my system, and eventually I just got tired of feeling like shit, so I hit the streets and got some meth. Next thing I know, I wound up here. But it sure feels like that's the real goal of this. We couldn't build it worse if we tried. At least not for now. I'm Ben Boyce.
If you rely on pain medication to help you get through the day, You could have trouble filling your prescription right now.
All right, there's an ongoing national shortage for drugs used to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and now one manufacturer is suing the federal government.
A New York-based law firm representing Ascent Pharmaceuticals, Inc. says the Drug Enforcement Administration is keeping its client from manufacturing generic prescriptions to treat ADHD.
Manufacturing delays, low supply, and rising demand has left those who rely on the drug every day unsure about how or when they will be.
Across the country, suppliers are reporting a shortage in hydrocodone.
For adults and children who need it, Adderall, other ADHD meds, and the generics can make all the difference in concentrating, multitasking, and lowering overall stress.